That's okay.
I'm actually going to try and get you guys to do some work. The people who have actually got computers in the room, I'd like you to make sure that you've got them out, you've got your phones, because I'm going to ask you to do some tasks. Because a lot of this is about collaboration. I'd actually like people to actually do some stuff while we're doing it. Not just tweeting Vitulas and tweeting Wikimania. I actually want you to get you to do some real tasks. Hopefully not writing a whole article. So the purpose of my talk is Glam Derby. Most of the people here will be familiar with Glam projects. This Glam project was different to ones that we normally do in as much as it involves a very small museum. The smallest city, I think, in the UK is called Derby, and it's got a very small museum, and it's nowhere near the size of the British Museum. So this is by me and a crowd. There's lots of other people who have helped with this. All I've done is just started it. As I say, my name is Roger Bamkin. I'm the chair of Wikimedia UK. I've worked with the British and the Derby Museums. I developed this thing called QRpedia with this guy called Terence Eden, who I'd never met before. I'm running a thing called The Right Challenge, which I'm going to tell you about. I'm talking to you now. And I'm going to tell you news about stuff that's actually happened whilst we've been here at Wikimania. So we've actually done stuff that's some more hacking, which I think is amazingly impressive. And see the acknowledgements, as I say again, this is not just my work. So you don't need to read this. We went to the British Museum. It was the Liam Wyatt thing. We did a backstage pass. Lots of people turned up. Over the next 4 or 5 months, we wrote basically 100 articles. You'll see at the top there, managed to write 5 FAs because they gave prizes for them. But the 100 articles were better than stubs. They were all starts or pretty good articles. I came away from there thinking the British Museum is 2.5 hours by train away from me. And although it was amazingly interesting, actually travelling down to the British Museum every time you wanted to do something was rather difficult. These are articles that we were doing at the time. I'm particularly proud of this top one here. This is a thing from the Smithsonian Institute. It's a picture, actually, of Stanley, the guy who met Livingstone. But somebody spotted on the back that there's this little black boy in the background. Who on earth is he? And now there's a Wikipedia article on him. His name's Kalulu. He visited 4 countries. He met the Queen. He met David Livingstone. He died at the age of 14. But it's just suddenly dragged him out of history and find out who that guy is, and I think that's an amazingly interesting story. The top right hand is an article I wrote myself. I'm not a good writer, but I managed to get 30,000 people to go and read my article, which I think is incredible. Lots of people who pretend to be amateur writers, the only people who read their work is their mums. To have this kind of audience is excellent. This guy is the only guy who's famous in my family. He's the first guy to go to New Zealand and get his face tattooed with traditional tattooing. This is an article, that number 4 is an article that came out of the British Museum, oddly, but it's painted in India by a guy who was a son of one of the curators who went to India, and then because of that, we suddenly got this painting coming out of history. So it's all about the links within this stuff. And the final one is this link to the BBC, which I think is particularly interesting because it's going in the opposite direction. Most of we're talking about information coming out of museums. Here we're talking about information going into the BBC. When you look at Duke Ellington on this website, you'll find out that all the information comes straight from Wikipedia. So they're taking the stuff into Wikipedia, which I thought was particularly interesting. This is a map showing all the Wikipedia articles for the UK. The impressive British Museum is here, right in the centre. The less impressive Derby Museum is here in the middle of the area where you don't have any articles. Basically, the work says that where people live is where the articles are written. So where there's lots of people living in the centre of London, that's exactly where the articles are written. Derby Museum's information coming out, so we had this collaboration with them. Here we've got a guy who went to South Australia, first botanist, a piece of rock, a painting, an area of rock made out of rock, and this wonderful bridge, cost £3 million. It's wonderful, because it's got lights. So it's well worth the £3 million we spent on it because it's 2 feet wider than the previous one. We had an agreement in January the 15th to go and work between Wikimedia UK and Derby Museums. And then in April we held a backstage pass. I'm not going to talk much about that because you've heard about backstage passes, I'm sure, from the other speakers. But we were starting to change museums. The reason why I was interested in doing Derby Museums is when we did the British Museum, we went in there, it was a very impressive museum, and we did lots of work, and when we came out, it was a very impressive museum. We hadn't actually changed it very much. The question I wanted to know was, if we tried it on a smaller museum, could we use the same kind of power to actually make some difference to it? And we did. One of the things we did was a policy change. When we arrived there, the staff were not allowed to use Twitter, they were not allowed to use Wikipedia, they were not allowed to use all these things, they were banned from them. We changed that policy to say that they were allowed to use Wikipedia. And that photos were allowed. When we arrived there, you weren't allowed to take your mobile phone in there, you weren't allowed to take photos. So coming back to the BBC question, I was wondering, why do the museums write labels? Why not just do a Wikipedia article and just put it straight in the museum and save themselves an effort? And the questions we got back on, this was on a chat late at night one, we got back because it's their job. The creators will get very worried if we do it for them. And we got Liam told, it's very tricky. He went on a 2-week course to learn how to write labels. It's not the kind of thing you can do, just kind of come up to it suddenly and pretend to do it. And somebody said we could use QR codes, but they won't let us try. I had no idea what a QR code was. This was the end of last year. They were only just starting to get a bit trendy in the UK. I hadn't even seen one. Oh, I have written down the bottom here. If anybody gets bored with the computer, find Derby Museum on the wiki in your language and edit the page. Just change a word or put an article on the back saying, nice work, everybody. Because I'm going to come to why that's important. So finding what a QR code is. They said that no museum would allow us to do it, but Derby Museum, because we got the collaboration, said, you can do it. Not only can you can do it now. And that's a bit of a shock for people, because suddenly you're saying, well, the reasons why we can't do this, the reasons why we can't do that, and then suddenly you find out, well, but yes, you can do it. So within 3 days, we'd learnt about these things. I think everybody's actually seen a QR code working, but basically you put a mobile phone over it, it senses it, it decodes it, it finds out the information, and it takes you to the article. So in this case, it's taking you to the article on QR codes. They're not new. They were invented in 1994 by Toyota. They've been using it for lots of car parts, for lots of reasons. The reasons why they're suddenly all very trendy is because everybody's walking around with a camera and a computer in their pocket. So we added some program to the standard Wikipedia page. So for anybody wanted installing it, they can have a button there and they can press and it can make one of these codes. And we spent 3 days, and basically you spend about 20 pence, you get a piece of paper, you laminate it, you stick it up with blue tack, and this piece of museum exhibit, which has been there for 25 years, suddenly looks a bit brighter, a bit newer, it's got a bit new technology, and you can find out not only just the name of the rock, but everything there is to know about that rock, because there's a good article on that rock. But we took all those down. As I said, there was a policy change there. We decided that we put these codes in, but we decided they weren't good enough. What we wanted to do was, I've got the example here of the Rosetta Stone, which I'm guessing most people have come across. The Rosetta Stone is the item that allowed us to decode the whole of the Egyptian hieroglyphics. It's a very important item. If you manage to get to the front of the queue at the British Museum, because you're going to have to go down, what you'll actually get to read is these three paragraphs. I would think most people in the room have probably read an awful lot. There are books written about the Rosetta Stone. It's a very, very important subject. So what you actually get is limited information. It's monolingual, it's only in one language, and it's unchanging. If the Rosetta Stone is suddenly want to be claimed back by Egypt, you can't add that to the information quickly. You have to wait until the next time you print it. What we wanted to do, we wanted to make it learned, we wanted to make it multilingual so it was in different languages, and we wanted to make it so it would evolve. And what we did was we created these extra codes with a website that goes with them. You click on them, and it takes you to the Rosetta Stone article. How it works? Basically, what this thing does, it detects the language that you've got your phone set to. So if you're a French person, you'll have your phone set to French. If you're a person who's very keen on Catalan, you'll have it set to Catalan. If you're Spanish, you'll have it set to Spanish. It detects that language, it passes it to our website. That website then gets the article for the language of the museum, finds the language that you want, and then brings it back to you, and you think it's just spoken to you in your language magically. Pardon? No, one code, every language. Pardon? Yes, yeah, so we have an intermediate URL that interrupts the flow and corrects the fact that you would normally have got it in your English, and we give it in the language that we think you want. So here we have it in English, the Rosetta Stone. Here we have it in German. Here we have it in Chinese. So suddenly from three paragraphs, we're going to have people get in the front of the queue. They can quickly click on it, go to the back of the queue and read all the information that they want on the Rosetta Stone. It then does a Wikipedia search and finds an article in your language that mentions the Rosetta Stone. And hopefully, one of those is going to be the closest. So if you're looking at the Mona Lisa, maybe you'll think Leonardo da Vinci is maybe the guy you want to read about if you can't read about the Mona Lisa. Pardon? Yeah. So the reason why we're doing this is 25% of visitors to museums are foreigners. Not every museum is in the UK, so we're trying to make this work not only for English, because we don't believe that English is the most important language in the world. But it is easy to it's an easy thing to think that if you come from England. QR code usage is ridden by 1,200% in the UK, and it's going up. The BBC now use them in cookery programmes. When they've given the cookery programmes, top right-hand corner of the screen, if anybody actually wants to cook for the cookery programme, they can go and read the ingredients. And I wanted to tell you about this one. I was going to show you a video for this, but I haven't got time. There's a Korean supermarket that's a foot deep. Basically, if you're on the Korean underground, they have the photographs of the goods that you want to buy. You take your phone, you click on the stuff that's on the phone, and when you get home at night, the stuff is delivered to you. That's excellent for the people who are doing the shopping, but even better for the people who run the supermarkets, because they couldn't get any space to run a supermarket, but they can find space to hang it on the wall. I'm going to skip through this, which just says basically it can run in France as well. The difference here now is the fact that you wander into the museum, Wikipedia is not only allowed, it is a source of information. It's suddenly we're telling you that that's the way of using the information. What have we done? We said the 100 articles in 5 months. Derby has doubled the articles in 4 months. We've only gone from 63 to 136, so we haven't done 100. However, we decided we need to get all these articles in different languages. Where are we going to get them from? We are in a competition. We gave points. We gave a prize, very small prize, £50. Within 15 days, we got 150 non-English articles written for us in all those languages, all the way across the world. This is where my editors are for this project. I've got two in the UK. The other 48 are spread around the world. I think it's very impressive. The fact that we've got so many people collaborating on a project for a museum that they probably will never ever visit. Here we've got it broken down by language. We've got 88 articles in, this has gone up a bit since then. We've got 88 articles in Russian, 87 in Catalan, 86 in Indonesian, etc. And here are the people who did it. If you know any of these people, go and tweet them. Go and say, well done, you were mentioned here. People saw your work. And here's a guy who's from Catalonia. He actually came to Derby Museum to see the dead pigeon that he'd written the article about. I haven't got time to tell you why the dead pigeon is important, but basically, he's just a dead pigeon. But the point is there that the museum suddenly sees, wow, we are going to be a rock star of a museum. All these people helped. Jimmy Wells, who said that he gave you some support to it, Terence Eden, who wrote the things, all these people helped. And you've seen the list of all the people who've done the editing. This week, Magna and Holger and another Magna Mansk have been doing extra work on this. They have done some stunning work in the last few days. Basically, they've written some stuff that allows you to turn out for a particular category. You can just name the Wikipedia category and press the button and it turns out hundreds of QR codes, which is nice for museums to turn out. But what I wanted to show you is this picture here. Just hold on for a minute. This picture, if I can just find it, hopefully I can. My mouse has stopped working, but never mind. Oh, it's not working. I can't get my mouse to work.
It works so hard.
You work the internet again.
Well, I'm going to tell you about it. The Alfred Nobel Museum is about all the people who are who have won Nobel Prizes. Holger's managed to create a picture made out of QR codes. You can hang it on the wall. It's got 800 different QR codes on the picture. It makes up a picture of Alfred Nobel, and you can click on it in 70 different languages. So this poster is a museum you can hang on the wall in your bedroom. And it's the whole museum. Not only has it got every Nobel Prize winner, but you can click on it and find out that somebody came from Haifa and what Haifa's about, and the Wikimania conference, and do all the links out that you can do with Wikipedia that will take you out to all the information that you can go at, which you couldn't actually do in the museum. And I just think that's absolutely incredible. Hopefully, by the time question time comes, we'll be able to show you this photograph.
Hello. When I wanted to call this presentation,
GLAM in partnership in real life. The reason was to say, okay, when we talk with museum, we never tell what is difficult, but here we can talk about that, about what we are doing day after day for the partnership. My presentation is very realistic, very. I don't want to destroy the optimism of everyone, but I just want to take a step and reflect on what we can do to the future partnerships. At the beginning, past years, Wikipedians were like pirates. When we were going on a museum, they don't want to talk with us in French, and in France and probably in other countries. And the GLAMs were very closed on themselves. They don't want to open their content because they think if I open my content, no one will come in my museum. Culture is for museum and libraries and not for internet. Internet is bad, is the place for no culture. And culture was made up and for the down and not down for up. And years after years, very good work was made by Wikimedians. Wikimedians were very enthusiastic. They worked to show that collaborative work does not mean poor quality. Wikimedians have learned to give arguments for free culture day after day, and they talk about benefits of sharing free culture. Some partnerships were very important for that. I think about Bundesarchiv in Germany, Tropenmuseum in Netherlands, British Museum in UK, and with the Bibliothèque Nationale de France in France. So we can think that the way is open, all is good. We can have whole partnerships. We can go in the museum and say, come to Wikipedia, and everybody say yes. But I want to tell about some points. The GLAM, yes, they are more open about Wikipedia. We can offer some very interesting partnerships. We can give example of partnerships when we talk with museum. The foundation recognize this work, and I think the work with GLAMs is a good way to assist in future chapters in small country or small languages. I think it's a good way to assist the future chapters. But in fact, it's not always the good world and the beautiful world. I think we are very enthusiastic, but maybe we forgot that we touch a very small part of GLAM, a part who is already open on digital questions. When I talk with people in museum or GLAMs, I know I talk with people who is already open. A lot of people on GLAMs never speak about Wikipedia, never spoke about numeric culture. It's a very small part. I want to speak about who is interested. Is it communication service or conservative? Does the partnership is a way of communication for the museum and GLAMs, or a real change in mentality? Roger said that some rules are changing, and it's often there is a communication service and not conservative who are interested. We sometimes make concession on the quality of photo. We can say, okay, for a small quality of photography, and I don't think it's a good way, because if it is public domain, it is public domain. We don't must to accept to make concession. What the public sees about this? The family who go to the museum. Do our actions have an impact on the museum visit, on public policy, or is it for a few part of public? When the other part is our relation with GLAM when we talk about Wikipedia. When GLAM meets us, they see Wikipedia and it's thousands of contributors, thousands of articles. We are actually a few dozen people active in the world. I think maybe 50, 70 people who work all day for GLAM project. Do we deceive our interlocutors? They see Wikipedia, they see, oh yes, I will have thousands of contributors for my museum, for my library, and so we are 10, 40, and it's a problem. And sometimes the relationship with the community, the Wikipedian community, is stretched. Too much solicitation. We want to have people to categorize thousands and thousands of photography, and they say, no, my work is not to work for you. The community is not at our service. They don't want necessarily work for our project. I think it's very important to understand why some projects don't run. The last question is, we do a lot of action, but are we able to provide a balance sheet to have result, to know the result of our action? What do we want as results? We work with donors' money. Donors give money to run Wikipedia. Do we host this money? Well, we don't know. I do not mean that what we are doing is wrong. I just want to feed a reflection on our practice. So what can we do? I think like Liam, that we must develop tools for statistic for reporting, working on measure of our action, our projects, to see what we want and if the projects are grown. I think we must develop tools for use directly by GLAM to promote the dissemination of content. I don't think the project is to have all the content in Wikipedia. I think our project is to have free content, and we must help GLAM to promote the dissemination of content. I think we must working with students and professional training to help people of GLAM to participate to join the project, to join Wikipedia projects, and not we work articles for the museum. And I think we must work with the community to show better the objective of our action. Not by the success of our action on the work of community, but help the staff of GLAMS to join the community to help the project. So, and you? I hope you have the same analysis or similar analysis, and I'm very interesting to know your ideas about this project. And I want to thank you because of my horrible French accent and my very bad English to support his presentation. Thank you.
My name is Hedva. I'm very happy to be here, and I'll be telling you about a special project we run here in Israel. It's called Piki Wiki, and you can go into the site and look at it. Piki Wiki is a free image collection about Israel, history, geography, culture, people, nature. It was envisioned about 3 years ago, actually on the 16th anniversary of Israel, and the founders, which I'll tell you about a little bit later, thought that Israel needs a free collection of photographs, because until then, there was actually no place where people could go and download pictures free for public domain or with some BYCC licenses. Everything was licensed and IP'd. Even the government reservoirs of photographs and the newspapers and private collections, nothing was free of use. This is our new design. It's going to come up very shortly. I'll show you later the current one that is working since actually April 2009. And we have a few goals for running Piki Wiki. First, to create a valuable collection of free images relating to Israel. Valuable meaning good quality of pictures, well documented, interesting stuff, and important for some reason, not just pictures of people uploading their family or their dog or stuff like this. We want to present this collection to the public in an easy way, so it will be appealing for people, children, students, academic people, to go in to look for the stuff they need, to download it easily. So ease of use and graphical user interface were very important for us. And we wanted to create a friendly environment for uploading as well as for searching and downloading the material there. So the founders of Piki Wiki are actually three non-profit organizations. It was started and envisioned by the Israeli Internet Association, which is also sponsoring this event here. Wikimedia Israel, the Israeli Chamber of Wikimedia, and Matach, the Center of Educational Technology in Israel. So all these three groups came together. We formed a committee, and we had long talks to decide how it will be run, the technological aspects, the usability aspect. And finally, we decided on it, and we started working on it. We started at the end of 2008, and by March 2009, it went live. Where do we stand now? These days, we have more than 13,000 photographs which were uploaded to PikiWiki and stored on Wikimedia servers. Because the way it's working, and I'll show it to you later, is the pictures are not stored on our servers, but rather on the international Wikimedia servers. It poses some difficulties, and we do have to handle them daily, but it allows us to have an international, open to all collection of photos, and we are very proud of it. We have more than 500 private people who registered and uploaded their pictures, and they continue doing it every day. We have some people who are very, very active. Our most active donor is a person, a retired physician, who uploaded more than 3,000 photographs by now, uploaded and documented. But most people upload a few, some more. But what's even more encouraging and surprising, I may say, is that we have more than 50 organizations, local archives, collectors of photos, and so forth, and other establishments that have registered into PikiWiki. We provide them a page for each one of these organizations where they can, where they have a portfolio, they can describe their organization, and it leads to a gallery of, a special gallery of their photos within PikiWiki. So the most interesting phenomena we observed really is the local archives of the kibbutzim. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the kibbutz way of life, which is a special Israeli feature, I guess. It started about at the beginning of the 20th century by small groups of very idealistic socialist people who started very small villages, collective villages, communal villages, doing mostly agriculture. By today, according to Wikipedia, there are about 270 kibbutzim still working in Israel. They have changed somewhat their economical method, but they're still quite collective. Now, these kibbutzim, which are quite unique in their formation and in their way of life, they, many of them had small archives of photographs from the old days, very interesting ones. Now, since they're small, they didn't have their own museum. They didn't, most of them didn't even have an internet site. So the photographs or the negatives were stored and sometimes forgotten in some old drawers. And when we came to them and suggested that they upload them to PikiWiki, they were quite enthusiastic. And we have many of them who have done great work in uploading pictures, very valuable ones. And the value is not just the picture themselves, but the stories they tell around these pictures. And I think it's very important both for educational reasons, for historical reasons, for people to be able to see these pictures that otherwise would not be open for the public. Now, as I said, all photos are documented and cataloged, and we have a few ways of searching for the pictures by category or by subject or just free search. So it's easy to find a picture on a subject you're looking for. All the photos are public domain or under a CC BY 2.5 license, where people write the attribution text they want to be used. So let me show you just a few glimpses of pictures which were uploaded to PikiWiki about the kibbutzim or by the kibbutzim archives themselves. Here's a picture from around 1920, 1930. The date is not exact because they didn't know it. It wasn't written. It's the laundry day in the kibbutz, and it was uploaded by the archives of the city of Petah Tikva. It depicts a kibbutz which is called Yad HaShlosha, which is near Petah Tikva. Here's another one of planting potatoes in 1942. This is from a kibbutz called Gan Shmuel, a bit south of Haifa, and it was uploaded by a very active archive people of Gan Shmuel. And here are some more. This is actually direct democracy, because in the kibbutz, all the decisions are made by all kibbutz members. So all the social and economic and whatever decisions are made by a gathering, a meeting of all the kibbutz members, talking about the subjects and voting. So this is from around the 1950s. And here is another picture from Gan Shmuel as well. This is the definition of kibbutz in Wikimedia, and you can Wikipedia, and you can go in and look for the details. And here is a very recent picture, which you may recognize just if you go out here. It was uploaded by Shaula just 2 days ago.
Who's right here?
Yes. And it is I don't know if you know, the tent protest that's going on in Israel these days. It's very active, very lively, and we have quite many pictures in PikiWiki telling us about this, and I'm sure it's going to have historical value, because this phenomena, which is quite new to us, of a very wide protest, is very unique to Israel. So you see, PikiWiki is quite dynamic. It includes very historic pictures, as well as interesting, updated phenomena taking place right these days. PikiWiki is not operating in the void. We have other means of uploading their pictures. To say the most known ones, Facebook and Flickr, and even Wikimedia. We have a problem with Facebook and Flickr, because it's much easier to upload pictures. You don't have to say too much, you just push a button and the picture goes up. It's very easy to share it with your friends. Same with Flickr, but it's quite different than what we plan to do in PikiWiki. Because we think the pictures in PikiWiki should be very well documented, should have value not only for the person himself, but for the rest of the people. And it should be in Hebrew, so Israeli people could easily go in. All this is not provided in Facebook and Flickr. Wikimedia, they are our cooperators, and we like them, but PikiWiki really provides the Israeli window for Wikimedia pictures, we feel. Right. That's wrong with you. Okay. Okay. So how does it work? If you want to upload a picture to PikiWiki, you first have to register. At first, we had a lot of thoughts about having it free with no registration at all. But since we need to have some information about the person who uploads the photographs, at least his name and his email, so that in case there is a complaint, we can trace him and call him and let him know that we are deleting his picture, we need a short registration process. During this registration process, the person has to agree to the terms and conditions of PikiWiki, mainly free use, no abuse, no personal photos, no advertisement, no pictures of children, unless there are some kind of historical information. Then he has to upload the photographs, one photo at a time or a few. I'll show you later the few of the screens that he has to go through to upload the pictures. He has to document the pictures, provide date, when the picture was taken. if not exact date, then estimates between this year and another, the name of the of the photographer, excuse me, the category, name in English, subject in English. The English part is required because we store the pictures in Wikimedia, and we want to have it open to all people, not just to Israeli ones. And the attribution, if it's not a public domain picture. And then, done. Thanks. That's what the person sees. Then what goes beneath? This is the backstage. So the person uploads the photo. That's the person right there. He uploads the pictures into PikiWiki. Now we have a PikiWiki administrator who goes through the pictures, not all of them all the time, but quite occasionally. And he handles any complaints or questions raising from people about pictures. Then the pictures are transferred and stored in Wikimedia servers. And now we have Wikimedia volunteers going through the pictures, hopefully approving them, but in many cases deleting them or just making nasty comments about them. And this is quite a problem because we are not actually sure sometimes what are the motives behind this criticism of the pictures. And sometimes we have some reasons to believe it might be political reasons. Sometimes they change the names or the definitions of the pictures, and sometimes they just delete them. Now, we understand it's part of the story, and if you want cooperation with Wikimedia, we go on with this. But we hope to make people in Wikimedia understand the value of PikiWiki and projects like this, which are open. They are open to the public to upload pictures and to download. And we do have our quality control, if you want, on the pictures uploaded to PikiWiki. And we would be really happy if these volunteers will be a bit more open and less strict about pictures uploaded to Wikimedia. I'm sure it will be for the good for both Wikimedia and, of course, for us, for PikiWiki. I think it's a few percentages, like around 5%, which is a lot. Yes, so it requires a lot of work from our administrator, who has to go through these alerts coming from Wikimedia volunteers. Sometimes we succeed, many times we don't. Yes. Many different ones. Sometimes no reason at all. Sometimes they claim the name of the picture doesn't represent what is seen in the picture, for example. So that's a reason for deleting it. Sometimes they say many times we have claims about infringing some panorama rights, which I have to say in Israel are not observed at all. In Israel, panorama rights are only two-dimension pictures, not to statues, not to buildings, nothing. So, and even those rights related to two dimensions, they're not observed. So everybody can go up, take a picture of some, I don't know, work of art he's seen anywhere and upload it. And it's okay. I don't know exactly what the term of the law is, but it's not observed. Nobody is ever Nobody ever sued a person. Let's take it further.
Let's continue. First of all, exciting topic. We will definitely get back to it.
Okay.
Okay.
Fine. So a few of the dilemmas we have in building and operating PikiWiki. And it's not easy sometimes to balance between, for example, our looking for quality of content and popularity. We want people to upload as many pictures as they want. We still want to control the quality of the content, and sometimes we have a hard time explaining them why we have to delete their picture if it's blurred or it's low quality or something like that. We want to have very user-friendly environment. So ease of uploading was very important for us. But still, we need documentation, we need registration. So it is, some people say it's a tedious process for uploading the photos, mostly beginners. After they start working with it, most of them say it's quite nice and easy. And we get a lot of very positive feedback from the archives, because these people, they know that you don't just push a button and upload a picture. So most of the feedback we get from the organizations is that our process is very, and our design is very user-friendly. So we're encouraged by this. And we have to balance between the sources of content, should we put our efforts on private people uploading pictures, or on organization, archives, professional photographers, for example. We tried to convince professional photographers to upload pictures, and they don't want. They say it's their business, they're making money from it, and they won't give up their IP rights on pictures. So this probably won't work. What we're doing now is contacting photography schools and asking the students to upload pictures, because we consider that maybe for them the exposure in PikiWiki will be more important than keeping the rights, at least at this early stage, and we hope we'll be successful in this. And of course, usability and versus Wikimedia regulations, which, as I said yesterday, not too easy. I have one more slide, but I don't know why it's not. Okay. Here are two slides of the screens for uploading the pictures. So first you have to give some agreements and comply with our terms. Once you uploaded the picture, you have to fill in all these places here with the name in English, the subject in English, the time, the name of the photographer, and other information if available, and the category to which this picture belongs. We have something like 30 different categories, which make it easier for people who are looking for example, Jewish holidays in Israel, to pick up this category and upload all the pictures that are in this one. It doesn't work. Okay. This is more or less my last slide. I want to tell you about what we are planning to do in the future. So first of all, upload our new design soon. Upload as many more pictures as we can. We want to, and we are working quite hard on building cooperation with more museums, archives, and other institutions. It's not easy, as you have explained. Some of them want to keep the pictures from themselves. Some of them are not open or don't want to invest the effort. But little by little, and as PikiWiki grows and that they see that it's usable, they agree. So it's not easy, but we do it. We do have, and we want to increase the cooperation with schools, because we think it's a good way to educate people from younger age about rights, about public domain and IP rights, and about how to look for pictures and use them and download them. We do, until now we didn't do any advertising, actually. We went on air and did very little to promote ourselves. Now we plan on going on Facebook and Google with some campaign. Small ones, but just to increase the visibility of PikiWiki. And we think of other promotional activities, mainly going to some conventions and talking about PikiWiki, showing it, and maybe going to some municipalities and offer them to use PikiWiki in their activities. So we do that. We have a big issue about uploading pictures from the US Library of Congress. There is a treasure there of very old pictures, photographs taken at the end of the 19th century, at the beginning of the 20th century. Most of them, they say that as far as we know, it's public domain. So now we, as an organization, have a problem. And we try to solve it before we go into some effort of uploading masses of pictures from the Library of Congress, where it's quite difficult to get there and it's not very accessible to the Israeli public. So we want to bring some of these pictures into PikiWiki, translate the subject and the content behind them, even do some more work to describe them and have them exposed to the public. So this is something we're working on now with our lawyers. Hopefully we'll find the right solution which will not infringe anybody's rights and yet make it public. And of course, we want to increase the cooperation with you guys in Wikimedia, because we think that PikiWiki is a nice project. It's done by the people, for the people, and we really want to make it more accessible to both people in Israel and abroad. We know that many people outside of Israel use PikiWiki. We even saw pictures downloaded from PikiWiki in newspapers in Australia and in Switzerland. They were looking for pictures about Israel, and it was easy for them to download them from PikiWiki. So we are very happy about it. Thanks. And I'll be happy to answer questions and raise this discussion. I think Yesha.
Yeah, so I'm inviting our distinguished speakers to the stage. Roger, please. And Adrian, and Petra already on stage.
You wanted to show your picture, right? Your Nobel Museum?
Thank you very much. So, to recap what we said earlier in the introduction, we really want to take this one step further and actually engage in some discussion about things that connect with the Wikipedia and what are some of the processes and issues that we need to do in order to facilitate that. I want to jumpstart this, and soon you will have each 2 minutes to say, you know, that's what we want, and I wish that would be the case. But before that, I want to ask our audience, sort of distinguish yourself into one of the two groups. One, you want to do something with Wikipedia or Wikimedia. That's really one thing. You're a museum, or you're doing something like WikiWiki or something like that. Or I am a Wikimedia, I am a wiki, and I will think about how these people connect with me. So who will be in the first category, wanting to do something with? Okay. Who will be the second category? Okay. So we have a little bit of a challenge here, 50-50%. We'll see how this thing goes. So, Roger, please.
2 minutes.
That's a difficult question. First thing is loading the pictures is a difficult thing to do. One of the things we're working with Derby Museum is because we want to show an example of what is possible. We want to show people the reasons why museums will not go out of business if they release their information. In fact, I think the opposite is true. If they don't release their information, people are living in Facebook, on Twitter, and on Wikipedia. They're not living in the city centres, wandering around and going into the museums when it's raining. They're in the shop, the outside malls and things. They need a reason to go there. If they've actually seen the information, if you've actually seen a picture of the Mona Lisa, it doesn't mean that you're going to wander down the Louvre and go, well, I won't bother to go and see that because I've already seen it. It's just crazy. You're going to think, well, I've got even more reason to go and see it because I've seen it so many other places.
Right. So one thing that is a take from your presentation, the business of QR code,
yeah.
which seems to be like a generic tool. I don't know if it started with your project or you just joined that project.
No, the QR code capability multilingual thing came exactly out of our project.
Perfect.
That anybody can use, yes.
Right. So that is, I think, is a good example of something that came from the outside as a project and really changed media and enabled this a little bit of an addition.
Yes, and we've got this other one here, which is hang a museum on a wall, which is just kind of absolutely brilliant.
Yes, so that's a good example.
Audience. Adrian? I agree with no. When,
what? Adrian, I see.
I agree with Roger. We must work for explain that content is not when we digital content is can be duplicate and not proprietary. Or when we put a content on Wikipedia or on another website, the content is on the museum and on Wikipedia and on the weblog and it's very good for culture and not I have not the word to know that, but I think you understand that I want to.
Well, I'd like Wikipedia to really provide free culture, meaning embrace projects like PikiWiki and others that are in line with your ideas and make it easier for us to and more accessible for PikiWiki to present its content in Wikimedia. Now, we are very open to offer our software and what we have developed to other organizations. So we'll be more than willing to let you have the algorithms for the automatic uploading of pictures that we use and that we developed in PikiWiki to be used for other organizations. We do it we offer it to organizations in Israel, and we'll be happy to offer it. It's a free open code, and we can offer it. And we would be very happy if you people will be more liberal with our content.
So here is the question. one of the key problems that we have is when you add up content to Wikipedia and pictures, and somebody decides that it's not accurate, it went through the process,
yes,
and you had one person looking at that, et cetera, and it was deleted. So I'd like to definitely hear what the audience is saying. Yes, please.
I'm Maarten Dammers, also known as user Multichill on the comments. I've seen the PikiWiki projects, and one of the main problems was, I guess, copyright. On the comments, we have the precautionary principle, basically saying everything is unfree unless you prove otherwise. And that's basically where the PikiWiki project and the comments clashed, because the PikiWiki project assumed something was free of some, or someone could release something, and commons is the assumption the other way around. It's not free unless you prove it, and that was one big mess. I don't know if it's solved, but I was just checking the recent uploads and was like maybe a bit shaky, like archives releasing images. Did the archive take the images themselves? I don't know. I hope you checked that before you uploaded it.
We certainly checked it, and the Israeli law is very clear on it. Any picture taken 50 years ago is free for use and public domain. Now, pictures taken by the kibbutzim, by some photographers 50 years ago, are free for use. So we do allow
first of all, free of use doesn't mean anything in law. So, well, please.
It's public domain.
Okay, yeah, please. Okay. 50 years after publication?
Yes.
Okay, anyway. First of all, something you said, we don't delete. I'm a Wikimedia Commons administrator, so I'm one of the guys who deletes stuff, I guess. Mm-hmm. And we don't delete pictures because they are badly named. We simply don't. And if you notice that, I block the guys or something.
We just checked in the history of the PikiWiki talk page, and we've seen images that are deleted because of their name, because somebody thought they just looked bad, or...
There was a couple of deletion requests.
Name.
Yeah, but there were some useless image.
Name.
My name, I'm sorry. Elke, Elia from Germany, and I'm also a common administrator. I had a look at the deletion log 5 minutes ago. So there were a couple of images where the deletion requests were useless image for a historical logo of the, what was it? A carriage company. It was a bit blurry, of course, yes, but low quality or useless was never a deletion reason, a valid reason on Commons, but this image was deleted. So we should check that, maybe. Yeah.
For the record. Record is an important thing. Yeah. Say we sit down and we all agree that the name is important and cannot be changed. Name of the picture. That's what I want to do. Say we agree that it cannot be changed. Why? Because it goes into another index, because whatever, some reason. Okay? Some technical reason of Wikipedia. Israeli guys, crazy people that just want to keep the name. Okay. Is it even possible, technically, to do that? Yes. For a particular kind of picture, pictures that come from this particular source.
Yes, it's technically possible to just make it impossible to move pictures, but that's not the community policy. But we're really not in favor of renaming files, because what you're saying, you break all these links and
right.
Things, so we generally only rename a file when it's really wrong. So a file name like 12345,
yeah,
we'll probably rename it, but if it's a reasonable, correct file name, we won't move it.
The challenge is, again, I'm pushing this because I think it's a generic question. Obviously, 123.5 is not a good name, and __... is not a good name. That's clear. Maybe if we have a set of rules like that, maybe we can check them already in the engine, in our engine. And once the central system understands that You know, we do a lot of checking. And if there's a request for a bad file name, maybe we can do that. The problem is that if you run a project, again, I'm looking at it from a budget point of view. If you start spending your time schmoozing with the 5% pictures of every Tom, Dick, and Harry changing a stupid name, you know, it kills the project. You're not uploading stuff. So we need to invest a little bit more energy, and I'm also talking about ourselves, you know, sitting down the right people in Wikimedia and having the right people there make the right decisions so we can actually do the project itself and not spend too much time haggling over miscellaneous stuff.
That's a very good issue. I think what we lack is a point of contact. We are actually dealing with many people working around the world. We don't know who they are. We don't know how to answer them. And we don't know what kind of... There are not really guidelines for how pictures should be documented in your view in order to make them right. We'd be very happy to sit with you guys and agree on some kind of guidelines that will help us guide our people and or, you know, delete it if it's not by the rules. Who could we talk to?
Here, first of all, it's basically part of common business.
I don't need a microphone.
Yes,
Who's in charge?
Just to point out what Chedva was explaining in the beginning, some of the images were deleted because their names were in Hebrew. There was
but we changed that.
I know, at the beginning, I'm explaining to these guys. Mm. Okay? So there was a period that the pictures of the project were deleted because of naming in Hebrew.
Yeah, but if it happened, it's probably a mistake, which should be simple, you know, to...
Only it was hundreds of pictures, so it was difficult.
It never happened to me that somebody will delete my image only for the reason that it was a bad name. It just happened that somebody renamed my image and he deleted the redirect from the old name to the new name.
That's bad.
That's bad because then there is no link. Because our people, when they go into PikiWiki and they search for a picture, they have to download it from Wikipedia. And if the link is broken, they can't find the picture.
But
I want to recommend it. I think so it's possible to make somehow the bot, which will, for example, give you the notice if we rename the image, so it will rename that. It's possible to do it somehow.
We do get alerts, but let me tell you, we are very, very small group of people handling PikiWiki. We have one person part-time doing the administration. She can't possibly... dealing with thousands of pictures. So it's quite, you know, it's a burden for us.
I'm just from the project. If we'll get alert for every picture that is renamed, it will help us a lot, but we don't get an alert for it.
Fair enough. Something strikes me. We have to. We are a decentralized group of volunteers that work all over the world. We are volunteers, and we have to fly all the way to Haifa to actually learn about this. I mean, I've been a Commons very involved member for over 2 years. I read every mailing list, every message possible, and I never heard about that project. So, okay, fair enough. You want to connect with us? Good. But I mean, a few images deleted because of names, and we heard about this, and you say, "Hey, that's crazy," and I agree.
It's 5%.
Yeah, 5% I agree. That's crazy, but we have ways when you can say, "Okay, my picture was unfairly deleted," and we can look at that. I feel like we are being bashed, you know, the Wikimedia Commons community about over non-issues or stuff that shouldn't have happened.
One tiny thing. Hold on. Sure. Go ahead.
I will just answer and then I'll ask the question. It's for another project?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll answer that there are many discussion pages about this subject. It's usually under Freedom of Panorama. There were many legal opinions issued to try and solve this question. And it's not completely resolved, but it's just everybody were too tired of arguing about it. But I can show you later, there is thousands of talk pages about it. Let's go to the question.
Hi, thanks. My question is actually about the Derby Museum initiative, and I've had a bunch of conversations with Liam on this one. I'm with the founder, who's shaved today. Okay. It's bizarre. All right. My question is this. When you talk to museums, and I'm trying to get into their minds and what they think of, what is it that we can tell them in terms of what's in it for me? If I'm a curator, if I'm a museum person, why should they do whatever it is that they're doing? And the second question, and I'm not trying to be provocative or disrespectful to them, but I'm about to be, but I just gave the disclaimer before that. If I'm a museum and I'm my entire reason for existence is to make sure that people come in and see my artifacts and see, you know, spend time inside it, why is there a mindset about I don't want to share stuff to as many possible people as I could?
Dealing with the last question first, I don't understand. Okay. I really don't. I've been working with this small museum for 5 months. We have built them world-class museum technology and installed it in their museum. And I still find that they want, when I ask them for some images, they go, well, we'll think about it. And it just, I don't understand how I can take 50 e-volunteers into a small museum and they're not going, what else can we do for you? That's brilliant. You're bringing somebody from Catalonia to come and look at a dead pigeon? That's amazing. We can't get our own people from Derby to come in and look at our museum, and we've got people coming from Spain. Pardon? Some of it's about control. And I think it's just, we always tell people they can't copy images. My grandfather, who was a curator here, said that he couldn't copy it. My father did, and so on. It breaks my heart because when I was talking with a National Portrait Gallery, which was a fight we had some time ago, some of the paintings they've got in there were given by people to the public domain 150 years ago because they were being given to the public. The National Portrait Gallery was the best way you got of giving stuff to the public. And the same way people put stuff into museums, because at the time it was the best way of giving stuff to the public. The best way of giving stuff to the public now is putting it on the internet, which means that those people in the museum don't really own that stuff. It's the public turning, somebody's already said before, it's the public turning up and saying, we now know what the meaning of the word public domain is. Why can't we have it back, please? It isn't yours. Can you repeat the first question?
The first question is, if I'm a museum, what's in it for me?
I would suggest that you've got a problem with your... We've got problems with falling editors. They've got problems with falling visitors. How are they going to adapt to a world where people live on Facebook? The person I was doing this partnership with was made redundant on the day of the backstage pass. So we had to employ him on the day of the backstage pass because museums are losing their funding. The local councils, due to the economic outlook, have not got the money to pay for anymore for these museums. They need to change their funding models and work out how on earth they're going to stay in business. Before museums, there were things called curio shops and things which went out of business when the museums came along. They've got to work out what's going to happen. Are they going to be part? Are they going to be the blacksmiths of the future, or are they going to be the engineers of the future?
Ilya again. Two questions or remarks. First, for the Derby project, just a question: if you could evaluate the quality of the articles which were written about dead pigeons. I'm sorry, I found it extremely complicated, and I joined the project for, there's one German article you wrote, it's one,
yep.
About the museum, and it was extremely bad when I met it, and I tried to improve the article, and it was extremely complicated because there were no sources, no references, no proper literature, the website is crap, I'm sorry. So it was extremely difficult to write an article that meets the quality standards, and you can't just translate an article without sources.
Yes, I agree with you. And one of the reasons why I was getting annoyed with Derby Museums was to say, a lot of the information they hadn't actually released out of the museum, and to persuade them to do so. They themselves are very poor at publishing.
Yeah, definitely.
They don't actually have a list of all their stuff that you can actually quote and say, is this dead pigeon in the museum? Luckily, that's actually mentioned on their website, but they've only got about 40 or 50 objects that are actually mentioned on their website. So you run into a problem of actually proving whether this museum exists.
Yeah. I had a lot of difficulties just to put some bit, find a bit more that which is on the website.
Which is odd that we're saying we're more academic than they are. You'd expect them to be saying we're not academic enough.
And I would like, the second one is just a short one. I would like to thank Adrienne for her remarks. Getting the feedback on the ground, I was a bit frustrated after the first glamorous sessions here because it's still extremely difficult to get people involved, glam people involved. And last year from Gdansk, I was so enthusiastic, inspired, motivated after Liam's talks. And we worked for 1 year and tried to get involved with Cologne museums, and it's so hard to get people just talk to us. And So thank you for being a bit more realistic than all the shiny happy people over here from the glam fraction. Thank you.
Yes, the Israel Museum is beginning to help us, and we did lots of work with pictures of the Maritime Museum in Haifa, who actually allowed to photograph everything they had.
Just a remark or a question. My name is Yolanda Pensa, and Wikimedia Italy. I have the impression that sometimes is a approach as two blocks, so really cultural institution and Wikipedians. I have the impression that there are maybe three things going on. So there are also the Wikimedia Association. So there is a institutional presence also in between. And I have the impression that when we talk about Wikipedians, we are Wikipedians. So even Frank Mayer, who was one of the people behind so the proposal of the Tropen Museum in Amsterdam, he represents the cultural institution, but he's also Wikipedian. So I don't think there's a passive and active role in the game. I think there is, at least it should be a bit more mixed because we're talking about people, actually, not really institutions.
I think it's, when I said we talk with a few people who is digital native or hot. In France, the French president of Wikimedia France, he's a curator on the National Library. And it's more easy if we have people who are in the GLAM institution and in Wikipedia. But I want to work with people who are not digital native. And it's very, very difficult. But we can have step on step to go to not digital native.
Oh, I'm Isaac Osgay from Kenya, and in Africa I've not heard much about the GLAM, and I must say I'm so happy about this presentation, and I'm also very thankful to Roger for having sponsored me to this conference. I've learned a lot, and when we go back to Kenya, we are going to start the same.
Must end this wonderful morning session with a better understanding of the pigeon.
Okay, I'm glad you asked this question. There was a race of pigeons in the 1940s. Thousands of pigeons were taken to Italy to fly back to the UK. One pigeon made it back. The story gets better. The one pigeon that made it back, there was a song made about him, and there was a book made about him. And on the Amazon books, if you go and look at the Amazon books about this pigeon, it's called The King of Rome. There is a guy who says that he was lost in Norway in a blizzard. And he didn't know anything about how he was going to keep him going. And he whistled the song of the King of Rome about this pigeon surviving against the odds. And he think it saved his life. And then he went to a talk in Birmingham. And somebody told him about the Wikipedia article and the work we'd done in Derby. And he suddenly realized that the pigeon he'd heard the song about was actually a real pigeon, and he could actually go and see it in Derby.